Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to the last episode of the decade and of the season, or I should say this year. Along with Macaulay Matthew, I'm of course William Ramo. What's up, Mac? How you doing?
Hey, man. What's up? How's it going?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm glad to be here. Glad to have you on the show, and I'm glad to have you all, ladies and gentlemen, check out this episode. Again, the last episode of the decade. So I want to thank you guys for, the continued support for the past 10 years as we enter 2020 and hopefully get to bigger and better things with the show. So again, thank you, Mac, and thank you all, ladies and gentlemen, for checking out this episode and all the episodes in between in the past 10 years. So again, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, man. So on today's show, we're going to talk about, my spoilers about the Star Wars movie, Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker. I'm going to give my thoughts about The Mandalorian Season 1 and talk about briefly about the Eddie Murphy, hosting SNL. And then, of course, do what we do best on this show, talk sports, give you my thoughts about the Knicks, how the Knicks are playing lately, the Mets signing Dylan Betances, and what moves I think, the Mets should do next. Also talk about, Yankees, their signing of Gerrit Cole again, talk a little bit about that and who they should go after as well. And, of course, it's week 17 with the football, so we'll talk about Giants and Jets as well, and end the show with a little WWE. But most importantly, we'd love to hear from you, so feel free to make your voices heard. But with that said, let's just dive into before we talk about the stars, let's dive into the SNL a little bit, the Eddie Murphy special. And of course, I know you checked it out, Mac.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, man. Eddie was, he was hilarious. He lived up to the hype. This was his first SNL that he hosted since 1984. Right after he left the show as a cast member. And he brought it. I mean, he had he had Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, Tracy Morgan, Kenan Thompson pop up, and obviously a regular on the show. I think this might be his last year too on SNL as a cast member. Am I remembering right?
Tracy Morgan?
Kenan Thompson. Didn't he say this was his last year?
He's been on the
show for like a long time.
Yeah.
Like at least, 14, 15 years or so.
Yeah.
I think he said he's going to, this might be his last year, but, don't quote me on that. But, yeah, it was a great moment, seeing those, icons on stage at once. Probably the last time they've been on SNL since the 40th anniversary a few years ago, which, ironically showed, Eddie Murphy return, in any capacity to SNL, which I guess opened the door for him to return now. But yeah, it was a great show. He did all his old school characters, Gumby, Buckwheat, you name it, he did it all. So to me, in my opinion, I think that was the best hosting performance in SNL history. And the only thing that I could compare it to in recent history would be when The Rock hosted it, like back in 2000, you know, during that WrestleMania hype, you know, between his match between, you know, Triple H, Big Show, and Mankind.
Yeah,
at that time.
Great too.
But yeah, that, you know, Eddie brought it, man. He knew the pressure was on. You know, he had to promote his upcoming movies like Dolomite Is My Name, that documentary that came out earlier this year, hyping up Coming to America, which to me is the second funniest movie of all time, comedy movie of all time, bar none. He's finally making a sequel like 30 plus years after the original, so. You know, Eddie, he's doing some big things, and then he's going to go back into stand-up, so.
Yeah, that's also exciting. I want to see that.
He definitely brought it. Yeah. What was your thoughts on his, his performance in Return to SNL?
Oh, man, it was epic, man. I was so hyped up to see it. You know, his monologue was great. Him bringing back the characters, Buckwheat, Mr. Robinson. With he had the gentrification in that skit. Velvet Jones. Yeah, he brought back all the big time characters, Gumby, you know. But just seeing him back on SNL after so many years, you know, it's unreal. You know, and him hearing him now going into stand up again, that's gonna be even, man, Eddie Murphy in stand up again, that's, I thought I would never see it again in my lifetime. You know, let alone host SNL, but the SNL episode was great. I do agree with you. It's probably the best hosting performance I've ever seen on SNL.
Yeah, and it helps that, you know, he's hosted it before. I mean, this was his first since 1984. And then, of course, you know, he's one of the greatest cast members of all time, you know, hosting, being a part of the show for like, what, 4 or 5 years in the 80s. So,
yep.
You know, so it also paid off. But what was your favorite segment? Or skit?
I mean, the Mr. Robinson Neighborhood is probably the best skit of the night.
Yeah, you went inside my mind, man. That's literally what I was gonna say, man. Other than the monologue, you know, my favorite skit was the Mr. Robinson one.
Yeah,
hands down.
Yeah,
that was funny.
And probably the second behind that one would probably be the Black Jeopardy, Velvet Jones.
Oh, yeah, that was funny, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And then I would say the Gumby would be third.
Yeah, yeah. They're all great. Well, actually, the Buckwheat would be third for me after the Black Jeopardy.
Oh, with the Masked Singer one?
Masked Singer, yeah. That was funny.
That probably would be fourth for me. But yeah, no. You know what? I just remember a skit that was really, really funny. That family one where Kenan played his father.
Oh yeah,
that one was really, really funny. That one had me bawling.
Oh, that was the commercial thing skit they were doing.
Yeah,
yeah.
About family.
That was funny.
Yeah, that was like
about that one.
Like a mock PSA, you know, about, you know, families, you know, spending time, the holiday season. Yeah, that was a funny one. I totally forgot about it until it just flashed into my mind just a few seconds ago. That one was really funny.
I'd still put that one behind the other ones because the character ones were the best for me, you know. That was the highlight for me of the show.
I think I would put that one over the Buckwheat one, in my opinion. But yeah, it was all he brought it, man. As expected. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, it's great. It's good, you know, skits are on YouTube, so.
And I ain't getting paid for this, so. I'm getting paid for plugging them. So I have no dog in the fight, but yeah, it was a real funny episode. So if you want to check it out, hey, feel free to check it out. I guess I'm going to shift gears to, before I talk about the stars, I'm gonna talk, you know, a little sports, you know. I think I'll save the Star Wars reviews towards the end. But yeah, let's just dive into sports. And the biggest thing that happened in New York sports right now is the Mets, you know, they finally did what was right. And they finally signed Dylan Betances, you know, the former Yankee closer slash setup man, to a 1 year, $10.5 million contract. You know, they have, you know, a player option for, I think, 2021, you know, and basically it was a no-brainer. Yes, Dylan Betances, you know, dealt with a lot of injuries, especially this year, to the point he only appeared in one game and struck out the only two batters that he faced. And once he, you know, after he struck out the two batters, he was celebrating and then he injured himself. So he only literally pitched, as you would know, Mac, he only pitched one game, and, you know, he in September, and then re-injured himself. So if he could stay healthy, I mean, that is a major coup for the Mets, you know. And then not to mention, you know, you need Diaz to bounce back, because, you know, Diaz, unlike Betances, Diaz, the jury's still out on him whether or not he could pitch in New York or not, because right now it's not looking good. You know, Diaz, before he got traded to the Mets in the Cano, the infamous Cano trade, you know, this guy was the best young closer in the game. Had like, what was it, 57, at least 57 saves.
Yeah.
You know, with the Mariners, and then he comes to the Mets and blows like seven games and gives up 15 home runs. Like, it was like every game, man, he gave up a home run. It was scary. If he would have been at half as decent on the mound as we thought he would be, in addition to Familia, who was the big free agent signing they had, who was a former closer for the Mets, you know, for many years, you know, especially, you know, most infamously, you know, in the World Series where he blew three saves, you know, in the World Series, which is the most for a closer. And obviously it wasn't all his fault, you know, because the defense was horrible. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Daniel Murphy and Lucas Duda. But in any case, you know, it wasn't entirely his fault, but needless to say, he did blow the game. And, of course, you know, that quick pitch that cost us a game one. But I digress. You know, I'm surprised I'm not even going to therapy for that 2015 World Series alone. But that's another story for another time. You know, I'm just, you know, that's what it is when you root for teams that stink. You know, they have so many horrible memories. Even the good times ended in misery. So I guess we all can't be Yankee and Giant fans like Macaulay. But I digress. Let's stick to the 2019.
But, well, you can't be a Yankee fan if you grab all our players from our roster. Like,
well, I mean, the Yankees are, you know, they've done it too. They've got, you know, Strawberry and Gooden, you know. So, you know, we've had at least over 100 players, you know, switch sides, you know.
More so than Mets lately, I've noticed.
Lately, yeah. I agree with that. Most lately with Granderson a few years ago. Dylan Betances this upcoming year.
Cano.
Cano, yes. Infamously, Cano is one of them, yes.
Pretty Tom Frazier.
Who? Oh, Tom Frazier, yeah, I forgot about him. I give you a thumbs down, but you're correct.
You wanted Girardi.
Yes, I did want Girardi. Yes, you're right. I did want Girardi. I did want Girardi, but unfortunately, Phillies did practically all the moves I wanted the Mets to make. They got Girardi. You know, they re-signed Wheeler. I mean, they signed Wheeler. They traded for Realmuto, you know, before the season started. So, yeah, I mean, the Phillies were doing – Phillies are doing moves, man, and that's why it was so important for them, the Mets, to sign Betances, because all the teams in the NL East are improving.
Oh yeah,
you know what I'm saying? The Phillies, you know, they made the biggest moves. You know, the Braves are the Braves. You know, they're always gonna you know, draft well and make some signings. Not to mention they won the division. Then you got the Nationals, they lose Bryce Harper, and then when Bryce Harper left them, he promised that he was going to bring a championship back to Washington, D.C., which obviously he did, because once he left, they win the title for the first time ever in history. Shoot. Not even the Montreal Expos won it. And they could have done it in 94 if the MLB didn't lock out that year.
Yep.
So, yeah, they did something that the Montreal Expos or the Nationals haven't done prior to this year. And, I mean, coming to this year, I mean, I knew the Nationals was good. Trust me, I knew how good they were. I think the Mets played better than, you know, head-to-head, the Mets played better than the Nationals. But the infamous game that I saw, the only game I saw all of this year was when the Mets was this close. All they had to do was win that game, that Sunday, that infamous Sunday night, Sunday morning game. If they would have won that game, they would have won the division. No, not the division. They would have was it the division? No, I think
wild
they would have won the top wild card.
Yeah.
They were no, not won it, but they would have been ahead of it. Not won it because there was still plenty of time. They would have been ahead of they would have been the number one wild card team up until that point, because they wouldn't have clinched it.
Right.
So that's why I'm trying to be specific, you know, with what I'm saying. So I won't, you know, mislead people. But in any case, had they would have won that game, they would have been sole possession of the top wild card.
Right.
Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And of course, DeGrom was on the mound, which, you know, the Mets don't play, you know, they don't score for him, you know, for the past 2 years. But that's how great DeGrom is. You know, he won back-to-back Cy Young Award, you know, even though the Mets often don't do nothing for him. But that's how great he is, even though the win-loss won't show that. But, you know, he's the best pitcher in the game. But, that shows the point. If the bullpen would have been good, if the bullpen would have been at least half decent, the Mets would have been a playoff team. But, you know, the Nationals, man, I knew they were a good team, but I didn't think they were going to win a championship this past year. The only few times I thought this whole entire year that they would have won is when they were up, when they knocked off the Dodgers. I was like, wow, the Nationals are going to the World Series. When they were up 2-0, I'm like, wow, the Nationals are going to win the championship. Then when the Astros won three in a row, I'm like, man, wow. Well, I guess not. I'm like, if the Astros don't win Game 6, they're definitely gonna lose Game 7, and that's clearly what happened. And then the Nationals became the first MLB team in history to win all road games and lose the home games, obviously. But, you know, you gotta give Nationals a credit. And Brody Van Wagenen foolishly said, come get us to the NL East. And the NL East, they came, got it, and won the World Series thanks to the Nationals. So the Mets, you know, they cannot be complacent. They did some good – they did moves that I like, you know. I spoke about this on my recent video, you know. But what was I going to say? But, yeah, they made some moves, but they could have – they have to do a lot more. So – to me, I think they should get a veteran catcher like Russell Martin, you know, to be a veteran leadership off the bench, you know, which could be helpful to the young guys, you know, but they can't be complacent, man. They really need to improve this offense, improve the defense in the outfield, you know, whether it's training for Marte, you know. Even though Marte took a little hit defensively last year, but he's better than anything else we have in this outfield for the most part.
Yeah.
As long as you don't give up Conforto or McNeil or anybody like that, You know, I'm willing to give up Nimmo. I don't want to give him up, but, you know, if you're going to get a Marte or somebody like that, you got to give something to get somebody. But you can't, you cannot give up a McNeil or a McNeil or Conforto, and definitely not Alonso. I mean, that goes without saying.
Yeah, you got to keep these guys together, you know?
Yeah. But let's see, man. The Mets need to make some moves, man. They need some veteran leadership, guys who you know, who hungry to win a title, or guys who've been there. I mean, I guess Cano could be considered one of those guys, but Cano has to bounce back and stay healthy. Because right now, Cano is like the square peg in the round hole of this team because, you know, McNeil naturally is a second baseman. But, you know, we need Cano to turn back the clock. Like, he was on your team.
I think the Mets need another bullpen guy.
They do. I agree. They should sign Will Smith or somebody like that.
The Fresh Prince?
Yeah, hey, he'd be better. He'd be better than anybody else that pitched last year. I mean, the Mets, with Dylan Betances, if Dylan Betances could stay healthy and, you know, Diaz and Familia bounce back, the bullpen that the Mets had, the bullpen this year could be good, you know, because Justin Wilson pitched well. They re-signed Brad Brock, who was phenomenal last year, grew up a Mets fan, and, you know, he had his, you know, he wore his heart on his sleeve. I mean, he's good. He was good. If they could get at least one more bullpen guy, you know, a bounce back by Gesellman, you know, the bullpen could be pretty good. And then you got Lugo, who was the guy, emergency start, closer after Diaz and Familia stunk. So Lugo became the closer, but the problem with him is that he couldn't pitch back-to-back game because he had an arm injury. So he couldn't pitch back-to-back games. So if those guys pitch the way that they're supposed to pitch, you know, the Mets bullpen could be pretty good. The Mets team could be pretty good, you know, because they got the starting rotation. The rotation took a hit losing Wheeler, but they did sign Porcello, which I liked. Michael Wacha, you know, he's an insurance type of starter, maybe a bullpen guy, even though he doesn't want to be a bullpen guy. I mean, that could be a good move, you know, but, you know, we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, I mean, the bullpen can be a shutdown bullpen, you know, but the question marks are going to be, can Diaz be the same closer that he was a few years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And can Betances stay healthy and be that guy that, you know, the Yankees relied on a couple years ago? So some question marks, but, you know, these guys can pitch like we've seen in the past. You know, this can be a dominant bullpen.
Absolutely. And then shifting gears, you know, on the Yankees side, of course, you guys got Garrett Cole. You made that big signing. You know,
oh, yeah.
You got Garrett Cole. And I think as the team is right now, the Yankees are good to go, man. The only move that, you know, in the horizon that people see the Yankees doing would be training for Josh Hader, you know, who's that phenomenal closer with the Brewers, you know. I mean,
that'd be insane.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees bullpen's already dominant already. But if they want to put – I mean, they could even improve on something like that. But to be honest, the Yankees are great the way they are. I mean, sure, they lost, you know, Gregorius. But, you know, the Yankees – the Yankees will always do whatever it is necessary to win, which is evident with them signing Garrett Cole to that 9-year $324 million with the option, that team option that could turn into a 10-year $360 million contract. So, you know, Yankees did what they had to do. What's your thoughts? What do you think they should do?
If they can get Hader, man, that bullpen is going to be sick, man. But they're going to have to trade a lot of young guys if they want to give – I don't see them doing that move. It would be crazy if they did, but I don't see that move going through. It's possible. You know, it's possible. But I see them right now. I think they need more help on the bench. You know, more some backup infielders and backup outfielders right now. So I think they should go for some utility guys or guys that can help us off the bench right now. I think we have enough pitching and bullpen help right now. So, but we'll see. You know, we'll see which direction the Yankees go in these next few months.
Yeah, but yeah, that's the easiest thing to do. You know, just getting a utility guy, you know, veteran leadership, a guy who could play multiple positions as opposed to starting pitching. I mean, that's, you know, that's why you paid a premium for a starting pitcher. Like,
yeah,
Gerrit Cole, man, he's averaging what $36 million a year. So
yeah.
I mean, that's you know, in this day and age, you know, people are paying less for sluggers, you know, and more so starting pitching is what starting pitching and defense is what helps you win championships. So
yeah,
you know, people are locking up their young talent. You know, Angels, you know, they gave Trout that huge contract. Of course, the Phillies gave Harper that huge contract as well. And but, you know, pitching, man, that's what gets you to the game. And people are just going to keep paying ridiculous amount of money to acquire pitching because that's what you need.
Yeah.
And that's why DeGrom, you know, he's a bargain for the Mets right now. Not to mention he's a back-to-back two-time Cy Young Award winner. So, you know, Mets gotta, you know, they gotta make more moves so they could get to that level, to the national level, because that division is tough. And, you know, Yankees are doing their thing, man. So you gotta tip your cap.
Yeah, you know, they just got to make this team strong. I mean, this team is already strong, but again, if they can get Hader, yeah, that would be crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. And shifting gears, the Giants, man. The Giants are going through another transitional period, man. They, you know, they had a, you know, a lost season. Well, I think what you guys are, what, 4-11 right now, I think. You know,
yep.
A lot of tough, you know, tough game, tough losses. You know, you did have that nice, blast from the past with Eli Manning winning potentially his last game. You know, as a Giant, maybe even as a NFL player, you know, winning that home game. You know, as a starter. So, I mean, that was a classic moment.
Yeah.
And now your boys are gonna go toe to toe with the Eagles. And of course, you know, Damian Jones, you know, he's starting that game. And haven't you guys won 3 in a row? I think.
I think it's 2 in a row.
Oh, yeah, it's 2 in a row. If you guys win tomorrow, it'll be 3 in a row.
Yeah.
So my big question is, if they win 3 in a row, do you think that's enough for them to save Shurmur and or Gettleman, or do you think they should clean house?
I think it would be enough to save them. And, you know, they got the strong quarterback going forward, so I think it would be enough to save them. You know, winning 3 in a row down the stretch, yeah.
If you were Mauer or Kish, would you fire? Which one would you fire, and which one would you keep?
Wow. I mean, I would keep Shurmur. I think I would keep him, to be honest, and get rid of
Gettleman.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I mean, the Giants, they're not a team that they're not an organization that's known for firing coaches within several years. Because if they fire this coach, this is going to be their third coach in, like, what, 3 or 4 years, you know? So I don't think they should do that. give this guy a chance and see what he can do next year. You know, so, I mean, this, you got a young quarterback, and you will get a high draft pick, you know, see what you can do. You know, give him another chance next year to see how he does. I mean, he's only been coaching his team for a year, so give him a chance. And then next year, if he doesn't perform, then you fire him. But the Giants, they haven't been known as an organization that goes through coaches like that.
Yeah,
you know?
That's very true.
So, and I don't think they should start doing that. You know, don't be the Knicks.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. I mean, if you're going to fire one, you might as well fire the other one. But what was I going to say? Yeah, I think they're gonna fire both. But if you keep one, you have to keep the other one. You know what I mean?
I don't see that both of them getting fired. I think if they get fired, it'll probably be next year if they don't perform. But as of right now, I think both will remain with the Giants. You know, and because they've only been here since last year, pretty much. So I think if they win tomorrow, there's a great possibility that both of them stay on.
Yeah, I mean it's a big game for the for the Eagles, because they're gonna try to clinch the NFC East. But you know, of course, fortunately for the Giants, you know, they're gonna try to play a spoiler, you know, against their longtime rival team. What do you think is going to happen?
It's going to be a big game. I see Eagles, I mean, yeah, they're playing for their playoff lives. You know, if they win tomorrow, then, you know, they have a great chance of going into the playoffs. So, but the Giants, they've been playing well these last couple weeks, so I think they're going to give the Eagles a good fight. They might end up losing, but I think they're gonna play well and try to upset the Eagles. It'll be a close game, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a close game, but I think Eagles are going to pull it out, you know. Even though Giants are at home, you know, but, you know, Eagles are clearly the better team. And I think Eagles will, you know, get the victory. But shifting gears with the Jets. The Jets, they're going to be on the road in Buffalo against the Bills. You know, another divisional rival, AFC East rival, and the Bills. You know, they already just clinched their berth to go into the postseason, which would be the second time in the past 20 years that they're going to the playoffs, and the Jets. You know, the Jets have had a tough season. You know, Darnold was sick. It was just basically a crazy season. They're playing a lot better recently. I think they won maybe 5 of their last 7 or something lately. But you know, it's too little, too late. And the Bills, man, they just. You know, Bills are gonna most likely whoop their behind tomorrow. But
it's gonna be a tough game for the Jets.
Yeah, it's gonna be a tough game. You know, they're gonna need Darnold to show up and use Le'Veon Bell like they've been doing the past couple of games. You know, so they could end on a positive note.
Yeah. But, you know, Jets have a chance. They've been playing well, you know. And they, you know, they've been playing they had to get that good game last week against the Steelers. So,
mm-hmm.
I think they'll fight hard in this game. But, yeah, Bills, you know, they're a playoff-ready team right now.
Yeah.
And they're looking to get a higher seeding. So, you know, they're going to try their best to win that game. And they play great defense, too. So they got to make that Jets offensive line and Darnold work for it.
Oh, yeah. And not to mention Jets, man, they're out for revenge, man, because they blew a 16-0 lead and lost by a final score of, 17-16, you know, in September 8th. So, you know, they definitely gotta be out for blood, man, and get their redemption on.
Yeah.
Before they play golf next week. Since they're not gonna be in the postseason, but
yeah,
you know, we'll see what happens. And then shifting gears with the Knicks, you know, we all know for the past 18 years, it's another lost season for the Knicks. But you know, to their credit, you know, ever since they fired Fizdale and hired Mike Miller, they've been playing a lot better and. You know, they've won two straight. The last game they played prior to today, they shocked the world and held the Nets to like what 27% shooting, and they finally beat the Nets, man. The Nets have been like destroying them.
Oh yeah,
especially like the past couple of years, but especially this year. So they finally got a dominating victory on the Nets. What's his name? Randall. He scored 35 points in that game. He was like, he was doing his best Bernard King impression right there. He just was born on them. And then
that's the guy who we thought we were gonna draft. That we thought we traded for.
Yeah.
Played like it on against the Nets.
Yeah. And then he basically continued it tonight against the Wizards. The Knicks beat the Wizards. Final score 107-100. You know, he scored 30 points. I think he had 10 rebounds. RJ Barrett, he had, I think, 14 points. You know, and then Ntilikina, he didn't play that. I mean, scoring wise, he didn't do that. He scored 8 points. I mean, he shot well. He didn't take that many shots. I think he had like maybe 6 assists or so. I mean he showed some signs of progress. I mean, this is how it is with Ntilikina, man. You gotta measure it, you know, by small doses. You know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You'd be like, yo, man, you got 8 points in what? Six assists, man. What's wrong with him? You know, you're a regular player. You'd be like, man, what's wrong with him? But with Ntilikina, is like, you know, okay, he's taking some steps in the right direction. You know, you got to lower the bar for him, man.
Yeah, the Knicks, they've been playing with a lot of energy under Miller, you know, and they've been playing well offensively and defensively on the floor.
Yeah,
and this change should have been made a long time ago. It looks like, because they're just playing with a different.
Mindset.
Different type of fire right now, yeah. Different mindset, and Peyton, that point guard, man, it's like he should have been at playing point guard for us, because they're passing the ball and running the floor now with him. Like,
I think this change. I think someone hypnotized him and thought made him think his first name is Gary. Maybe I think that's why he's playing a little better. You know.
Well, I mean.
Obviously not playing that good, but
he was out. You know, he was out for a while. So if he was healthy and he was, you know, starting for us as point guard, who knows what our record would be? You know.
Yeah. Very true. But yeah, now there's a report saying that the Knicks, you know, there's some Knicks that want to be traded, and most notably Dennis Smith Jr., the guy who was the major. Personally got back in the Porzingis trade. He wants to be dealt. And, you know, to be honest with you, I mean, I'm not surprised by it. I mean, to be honest with you, there's only a handful of people on this Knicks team that I think should be held on to. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, we got clean house, you know? I mean, they are playing better. But, I mean, we can't have this pipe dream of, oh, my goodness, call Anthony Towns is going to is going to demand a trade to the Knicks. Oh, we're going to get the Greek Freak after his brother had a bad experience after being drafted by the Knicks. You know, you know, people think, you know, oh, he's going to come to the Knicks. You know, I'm just tired of these stories, man. I'll believe it when I see it. When a prima donna player, you know, is a free agent and they have the guts to sign and play in New York and change the culture, the losing culture of this franchise, then I'll believe it. Because none of these guys are gonna want to come here. The only way we're gonna come here is if we hold on to RJ Barrett, Kevin Knox, Mitchell Robinson, and then we draft the right way, and we draft hungry guys who's gonna be part of the future of this team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, trying to go after these guys, they're not gonna come here. You know what I mean? We gotta do things the right way. We have to trust the process, like the 76ers did. You know, we gotta build a young, hungry team. Yeah, I mean, this team, I mean, they took a step in the right direction, you know, sending these veteran guys to you know, like 1 year contracts, with the exception of Randall, which is like, what, a 2 or 3 year deal. You know, other than that, we don't have anybody really long term. But these guys are not going to be here when the Knicks actually become mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because the standard is very low for this Knicks franchise, you know. We're not talking championships here anymore, you know. Even though we haven't won since 73. Shoot. Since San Francisco was on television, the Knicks haven't won a championship.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So the standards has been low, man. We're trying to get ourselves to a respectable team that we used to be in the 90s when we were actually, you know, striking at a championship type of level, but unfortunately never could make it to the promised land thanks to Jordan, which boggles my mind that every time he comes to the Garden, people have to give him a standing ovation, even though he's the main reason why we didn't win anything in the 90s and ever since, for that matter. But that's besides the point. But, yeah, man, Knicks need to get their act together, man, because we can't be wishing, hoping, and praying for someone to save this team, and nobody's coming. Nobody's coming to save us. Adam Silver, the commissioner, is not going to save us. David Stern is not going to save us. Back in the days, we got to do it the right way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's drafting wisely, or even an extreme case, you know, instead of waiting a few years when Masai Ujiri becomes a free agent as a GM, or maybe even taking the drastic step of trading away premium number one draft picks to get him, because that's the rumor, you know. But the Knicks, man, they just got to make sure they make the right decision, because they need to build a strong nucleus of young guys, and not rely on the mercenary players who's going to come once we're championship ready, you know, theoretically speaking, and then they're going to come and try to be the final piece and turn the franchise around, because it's not happening. When, you know, unfortunately, New York isn't the market that it used to be, because these players, man, they don't care about New York. They don't care about MSG. They don't care about the history of basketball. They just care about making super teams and just beating up on the Knicks, man. They just want to take the easy way out. So that's what it is, man. Knicks need to get their act together. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, Knicks just got to continue building. You know, get rid of players who don't mesh with the system. You know, Dennis Smith, I mean, when we got him last year, I thought, you know, this was the guy we were supposed to have already on the team. But clearly, I mean, this guy, he's not a true point guard, and his defense is lackluster. So we've got to trade him. And, you know, but with these guys right now, like Barrett, we got to keep. Nikita, I don't care about Nikita, because he has he's one game he'll be consistent, another game he'll be very inconsistent. So
yep.
I think we just got to part ways with him as well.
I'm with you.
But these other guys like Mitchell Robinson, Barrett, Knox, we got to keep those young. We got to keep that young nucleus together, you know.
Everybody else, you got to go. Even Randall. Randall's been good, but
I actually like Randall.
I like Randall. I mean,
I
he's
know
good.
You're not big on him, but I want to keep him. I think there's I think we can get, you know, we can get some production out of him, you know, just on the, in the right system. I think with Miller now as a coach, I think now we could, you know, get the Randall that we traded for, you know, get a guy who can score in the paint and maybe improve his defense a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't give up on Randall right now because he's actually playing good, to be honest with you. I mean, we'd have to get something really big to for me to trade him, you know, because he's actually living up to the potential.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He is making like $20-something million a year. Like, what was it, 22 per year? You know, to me, I think that's a little bit too much for him. I mean, he's a very good player, but I think he's overpaid. But then again, if you want a player of talent to come to the Knicks, you got to overpay because you're not going to get those superstar players to come over here anyway. Even though we cleared up our cap space and traded Porzingis for this seemingly infinite amount of cap space, but no one wants to come here. So, you know, I would hold on to him. You know, I know Morris is a guy that people are interested in. He has a one-year $15 million contract.
I like Morris as well, man. I think Morris is our best defender out there.
Yeah, so I'm saying those two guys, you know, I say hold on to them until you get a deal that's comparable, you know, to their talent. You know what I mean? Everybody else, I mean, you could get rid of those, you know, because, I mean, it really doesn't matter. You know, we're not going anything anytime soon, you know, until we have a team established, especially with young guys and some mixing with these veteran guys, you know, to turn it around. They are making strides to their credit. You know, they won two straight. You know, they're playing a lot better. So, you know, kudos to them for now. But let's go to WWE quickly and then we'll go to the spoilers of these Star Wars stuff. Well, to me there's nothing really major that happened in WWE lately other than Daniel Bryan, you know, winning the number one contender match between Baron Corbin, King Corbin, and The Miz. I don't know about you, man. Like, they had the same match three times yesterday on SmackDown. Like, what was up with that? Like, they had, like, they restarted the match, like, two times. Like,
I didn't see some of SmackDown yesterday.
But, yeah, that was entirely the whole show.
Just Corbin and Roman Reigns fighting?
Like, here's what happened. The show started off with the three of them fighting. Daniel Bryan, Miz, and Baron King Corbin to start off the show. The match ended in disqualification. So then they said they're going to fight later that day, Friday at SmackDown. So then it became Roman Reigns attacked King Corbin because he had interference, I think, in the match. So then it became a one-on-one matchup between The Miz and Daniel Bryan. And then when they were fighting, then Baron Corbin sent his henchman, the guy who carried him on the throne, the portable throne, I forgot what you would call it, you know, that he walks in, he enters the ring, they attacked them. So instead of punishing Baron Corbin for interfering in the match, they insert him back into the triple threat match to determine who's the number one contender for the Bray Wyatt's Universal title. So it became a triple threat match to end the show, and, you know, Daniel Bryan came out the winner. So to me, the best person won, you know, out of the three. But, that was basically the whole show. Nothing else really major happened, you know. Daniel Bryan will be facing Bray Wyatt, the Fiend Bray Wyatt, at Royal Rumble. Should be a great match to check out next month. And then on Raw, Lana and Bobby Lashley, they're gonna get married this Monday, upcoming Monday. I can't really think of anything else that happened on Raw this past week.
That wedding is this Monday. Yeah, you know, Rusev's gonna interfere and attack.
Of course,
Lashley.
I can't remember anything else memorable that happened, especially with Brock Lesnar not showing up and holding the WWE title for hostage like he's done with the Universal titles for this past couple of years.
Uh-huh.
You know, I can't even think of anything memorable that happened on Raw.
I don't even remember what happened on Raw.
And,
you remember more than I do.
I don't remember nothing. But the major thing that happened in WWE was Andrade, he won the United States title from Rey Mysterio in a live show at MSG a few days ago. So congrats to him. But other than that, I don't remember anything major happening in WWE. But I guess we'll find out what happens, this upcoming week.
Have you been watching AEW?
I haven't really been watching it. I haven't watched it in like maybe in a month or so.
Okay.
I'd have to catch up.
Same
I haven't even really watched NXT either, really.
Oh.
But, I definitely should check it out this upcoming week. If I'm home. What was I going to say? Oh, yes. But last but not least, yeah, man, let's dive into Star Wars. And, here's my thoughts on the Star Wars Rise of the Skywalker. Here's the thing. When I first saw the movie, I was like, wow. I give this movie a 9 because the bar has been set so low, in my opinion, after the Last Jedi, from 2 years ago. To me, that film killed the Star Wars franchise. So, me going into this episode 9, there was no hype, there was no buzz, there was for the Last Jedi because the Force Awakens literally end the movie on a cliffhanger. So I was anticipating, wow, The Last Jedi is going to be so awesome. And literally, if you didn't watch The Last Jedi, you didn't miss anything because The Last Jedi was literally did not continue anything that The Force Awakens continued. And then coming to this movie, there was no buzz. I was just really watching this movie, The Rise of the Skywalker, just to see if they're gonna, redeem this Disney sequel trilogy. And to me, how can I describe it? When I first saw it, I was like, okay, this is really good. I gave it a 9. But then as I thought about it more, there was so many mystery boxes that were left unanswered, which, I mean, it's always good to have some mystery, but some of these mysteries were needless. Like, one, how did before I go back, remember, these are spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie, do not listen to the rest of this, because after this, I'm going to spoilers on The Mandalorian. But in any case, how is Palpatine back? And the only explanation is, they use the line where he says that, the dark side does stuff that we consider unnatural. And that was it. To me, Palpatine, along with Darth Vader, his apprentice, are the best villains in Star Wars history. To me, you cannot just bring these guys back up, especially after they had a wonderful finish, to their storyline in The Return of the Jedi in 1983. So to bring back Palpatine, arguably the greatest villain in film history, you could even say the case for Darth Vader as well. To bring him back in this fashion was just a cheap way to get the fans to come back, because his story arc was perfectly finished with Anakin / Darth Vader, redeeming himself and finally overthrowing the Emperor and bringing back balance to the Force. But in this case, they bring him back for no reason. And, I mean, it just shows that the Disney Star Wars, they don't have a plan, man, because the first two movies were hyping up Snoke and Kylo Ren as the two big bads of the sequel trilogy. And then in The Last Jedi, they just kill off Snoke for no apparent reason. And then they revealed that he was just a clone that Palpatine was using behind the scenes. But then another question is, if Palpatine was alive this whole time or resurrected shortly after he died, why did he let his empire be destroyed just to secretly hide in the wings to try to overtake it again? It didn't make any sense to me. Well, I mean, what were your thoughts?
Well, I mean, the movie overall, I really liked. You know, I would give it anywhere from 8.5 to 9. You know, just because it redeemed itself from The Last Jedi. And, you know, it had some interesting storylines, which, yeah, I mean, seemed odd, but I thought were brilliant by J.J. Abrams. I mean, bringing back Palpatine was a bit weird, but at the same time, you know, having him being resurrected again and seeing him on screen again and him revealing himself to be Rey's grandfather, I thought that was brilliant. You know, in a way. And also the story arc of Rey and Kylo, them finally, you know, coming together, you know, because they teased that in The Last Jedi, where you thought they could be brother and sister or they could be romantically involved. You know, well, we find out they're not brother and sister, but in this movie, you find out, you know, They could have been lovers, you know. You see Kylo turn from this evil menace into a face, you know, a good guy, and he ends up saving Rey, and you know they have that big kiss that we've been waiting for.
So you've been waiting for it.
You know? Well,
and
I mean, people thought it was gonna happen in The Last Jedi, where they teased it a bit, you know. But yeah, we finally see that kiss, and then Kylo dies, which I didn't expect. I wasn't expecting him to die in this movie. And also in this movie, I thought Rey would, Rey was going to be, you were going to see her as a villain for a portion of the movie. You know, I thought that was going to happen, especially after they found out Palpatine was her grandfather, but that never really happened, you know, so I thought that was a little disappointing. But other than that, I thought, I didn't have any problem with it. I thought it was great. I mean, yeah, it was weird that they brought back Palpatine, but, you know, I could see why J.J. Abrams did it, you know, to kind of redeem the franchise after it was almost destroyed by, what's-his-face,
Ryan Johnson.
So, yeah, I thought it was great. I loved the fighting scene between Kylo and Rey in the water. I thought it was one of the best fighting scenes in Star Wars I've seen. Other than that, yeah, man, I enjoyed it.
I thought it was a good movie, but I just, overanalyzing it as a like a diehard Star Wars fan, I just started to see a little bit of the cracks. So right now, coming to the movie, I thought it was a 9. Right after I saw it, I thought it was a 9. But thinking about it a little bit more, I said I'd give it an 8. I mean, it wasn't a bad movie by any stretch of the imagination, but there was some stuff that they did that could have made it a lot better. Like, for one, the Force Ghost at the end, with the, you know, the battle scene between her and Palpatine, they instead of showing the Force Ghost, you hear the voices, and you can't really make out the voices that well because you're just hearing the voices of the people. So I'm waiting for them to show the people. And what made me mark out was like when I heard Anakin say, "Bring back the balance of the Force," as I did. I was like, "Oh shoot, that's Anakin." Because his voice isn't as recognizable as, you know, Mace Windu or Obi-Wan or, you know, anybody like, or Luke, you know. So once he said that line, I was like, oh, shoot, Anakin. Because, see, that's my point. If you're going to bring back Palpatine, you have to bring back Anakin. You have to, at the very minimum, bring back the Force Ghosts. If they would have brought back the Force Ghosts and you would have saw them, you would have saw them, that would have made the scene a lot epic. That would have been easily the most epic scene in this entire sequel trilogy. Because basically they were, you know, the fans were fooled. They were thinking that the film, the sequel trilogy was going to be, you know, the return of the band back together again. You get to see what happened to them 30 years after what happened in Return of the Jedi. And then you introduce these new characters, you know, on their journey. And then afterwards, episode 8 would have been them shifting towards focusing more so on the younger cast, Rey, Finn, and Poe, and Kylo. And then by the time episode 9 came about, you'd be like, yo, man, you know, you're basically... Then the way how they treated the original cast members in Force Awakens, they would have been organically done that they would be supporting players,
mm-hmm.
and then you would really be emotionally invested into the characters because Force Awakens was a great movie. I really liked that movie. I didn't like that there was no reunion, you know, between the main character, the original trilogy characters, and basically. You think there would be a continuation of episode 8, The Last Jedi, but the young main characters were split apart. As a result, Finn wasn't really with his new cast, and his character got destroyed. His character had such an arc, and interesting arc. You know, him being a former stormtrooper and then potentially being a force sensitive, potential maybe a Jedi. Padawan in the future, but then The Last Jedi just turned him into a joke, just like they did to General Hux, who was unceremoniously killed in this in the ninth film because of basically you can't take General Hux as a threat anymore after what happened to The Last Jedi, getting your mama jokes in the first 2 minutes of the film that just destroyed General Hux's credibility.
Yeah.
So yeah, basically, I mean, this the sequel trilogy, they could have gave more respect to the old school characters. I think the sequel trilogy would have been very profitable for Disney. I mean, sure they made $1 billion in Force Awakens and what $1 billion in The Last Jedi, but as of right now. These movies are taking a hit because some of the fans are not happy. The old school fans are not happy the way how the film was, you know, the direction of the films. But all in all, you know, 2 out of 3 isn't bad. You know, I loved Force Awakens. Didn't like The Last Jedi. Was the worst movie in Star Wars history. Even worse than Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, which. Those are, prior to that, those were the two worst movies that most Star Wars fans hate. And then I really loved the Rise of the Skywalker. But to me, J.J. he leaves too many stuff unanswered, like Lando asking Janna, you know, where is she from and all that stuff. And she's like, she don't know. And he turns to her and he's like, well, you know, let's find out. And then she smiles. So it's like the way how they made it seem like he's either hitting on her or he's trying to be helpful to her. And then apparently, according to the visual book, I didn't read it, but it looks like she's Lando's daughter.
Oh.
That's something that you should have mentioned in the story. At the end, they didn't have to put that little part in the thing if they're not going to reveal if that's his daughter or not, because it's like, why would you put that question in doubt if you're not going to answer that question up front? And then another thing was Finn had something to tell Rey. We're thinking he's going to tell her that he loves her, but no, it's that he's force sensitive. I mean, why can't he just tell her that to begin with? See, I mean, these stuff should not be going unanswered. They should have been answered inside the movie, but I digress. It was a good movie, but it could have been a little bit better, in my opinion. But shifting gears, lastly to the Mandalorian. Now this is a innovative show, man. There's never been a a Star Wars show like this live. This is like the first live action series that Star Wars has ever made. Stars the Mandalorian. You know, a bounty hunter who befriends a baby Yoda when he was assigned to kill baby Yoda without knowing who or what it was that he was targeting. He befriends it, and basically his reputation as a bounty hunter gets messed up, and you know, basically he's a marked man. And along the way, he meets IG-11, who was originally sent to destroy him, but then later befriends him. Cara Dune, played by Gina Carano, you know, the former MMA fighter. Carl Weathers as, what's his name, Cargo? I forgot his first name. But, I mean, it's such an all-star cast, man. It's a phenomenal show, man. Hilarious, action-packed. And the episodes keep getting better and better and better, man. From season six, episode six to the final eighth episode, man, it just holds you at the edge of your seat, man. Just finding out what's gonna happen next, man. And they've had so many awesome episodes. The first episode where you establish the character and the big reveal of Baby Yoda. Then you got the third episode when the Mandalorians reveal to the world that they're still alive, and that they weren't all destroyed by the Great Purge. And then afterwards, you know, you got the jail episode, in episode six. The seventh one was basically a two-parter from the season finale. What's his name? Giancarlo Esposito reveal himself, finally debuts as Grant, the Moff Gideon. Who, man, he made an entrance, man, in the TIE fighter, and they had the whole anticipation of the standoff that lived up to the hype. And man, that eighth episode, man, they saved the best for last, man. Basically everything I want to happen, man. You know, I want to see, Cargo, you know, reunite with Mando, and you know, finally join forces with him and Cara Dune, and yeah, man, the band finally got together, kick butt. I mean, it was a great series, and then they showed the reveal of how the Mandalorian looks. Of course, you know, he's played by Pedro Pascal. And I mean, it was phenomenal. And then afterwards, the cliffhanger-ending finale, you know, you had the battle between Moff Gideon and Mando. And it revealed that Moff Gideon, at the end, he's alive, and he has the Darksaber. The one-of-a-kind Darksaber that was introduced in the Star Wars Clone Wars cartoons and then into the Rebels cartoon. So, a long history about that saber, man. And I'm glad it's going to be in the series, man. Well, what's your thoughts?
I thought it was that final episode was great. Probably the best episode of the season. But, yeah, you learned about the origins a bit of the Mandalorian. You got to see that Darksaber, which I didn't even know about, you know, until I saw that episode. But, yeah, all in all, it was a great episode, a great season, a great first season for The Mandalorian. And now we have to wait a full year to see season two.
Yeah.
It'll be a long wait, but, you know, this is probably the best series on TV right now.
Oh, hands down.
Yeah.
I give it a perfect 10, man.
Yeah.
The Rise of the Skywalker did enough to redeem the film franchise, even though there are a lot of stuff that they could have done that would have made the film, you know, a perfect 10 in my eyes. But it was a good movie. You know, it did its job. It was a good movie. But The Mandalorian, man, that's a perfect 10, man. It's a breath of fresh air, man, of, you know, innovative film, man. I mean, series, TV series, man. And, you know, you got to give credit to Dave Filoni, Kevin, John Favreau, man, for and all the other directors like Deborah Chow, Rafa Aqua, whatever, and Taika Waititi, man, along with, you know, the list of others, man. They really contributed to the behind the scenes of the show. And then not to mention that cast, man. Pedro Pascal, Gina Carano, Carl Weathers, Giancarlo Esposito, man, the whole cast, man, it was phenomenal. They couldn't have done it any better. Like, and I can't wait to see season two. You know, they hint at, you know, possibly revealing the origins of Baby Yoda, who's his parents. I'm hoping it's Yoda and Yaddle, you know, the two Jedi masters, because those are the only two of Yoda's species that we know of, in the canon.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Old Republic, I mean, there was a Yoda species alien, but, you know, in canon, those are the two, Yoda and Yaddle are the two well-known ones, and normally Jedis are not able to, you know, be in relationships, but they could be extinct species, so they could give them a pass, maybe.
Right.
But who knows? Man, I'm just looking forward to that. Is there anything you'd like to say?
Just check out my show, iMac, Saturdays at 10 here, and come back, check out Sports with Legend. Every Saturdays at 11, only on Block Talk Radio.
You heard him. You heard everything he said. And I'll also check out another new episode of Sports with Legend TV on YouTube, available now. And I want to wish you, Mac, and I want to wish you all, happy holidays. I hope you all had a, you know, wonderful Christmas and happy holidays. And I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed and happy New Year's. So he's McCallum Matthew. I'm William Ramo. And I'll see you guys next week, next year. Peace. Next decade. See you guys next time. Peace.